Gaylene Preston, New Zealand film icon and now multitasker, welcome to Cinematica.
Been multitasking for a while.
Right this second, you're making coffee and you're talking to me, and I think it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, it's a tribute. It's a tribute to technology. You're two-way Skyping, and I'm on my speakerphone on my Samsung clever thing.
And a steaming pot of coffee is just about to come off your stove, so I hope.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
People's Ethiopian.
That's exactly the same blend that I use. We should maybe get them as a sponsor on the show.
Exactly.
Look, we're here to talk to you about a new film that's got your name on it as executive producer. Tatarakihi is a documentary that played in the film festival in various locations around the country. And this week it's sneaking into some cinemas in Auckland and Wellington. Can you tell me a little bit about the film and how you got involved in it, Gaylene?
Well, I've been going to Parihaka to and fro in a little and often, over since 1981, when I went to the centenary there that they had of the centenary of the siege. So that happened in 1881. So and I went back with Erawera Nia. In 1981, they had a works trust hui there, and at that time I had the Mr. Wrong Jag, and and we filled that full of video gear, which was, you know, in those days, really old video gear was really big, and we took it to Parihaka and set it up in Te Pai Pai and did a week-long video workshop to train people how to tell their own story. So that's been my involvement with Parihaka since then. And when Pāra Joseph arrived in the district, it was really great because he had he was the one who had the real mission to want to record oral histories and really get the story of Parihaka out to the world in film form. And so it was really great because then I had someone to work with, because I didn't feel that it was my place to be leading a project like that.
And this is the story of Parihaka that has been told in other forms previously. There's a few books that I've read and listeners with access to sort of memories of New Zealand pop history will remember a Tim Finn song with Herbs that was a big hit about 20 years ago. And is this the first time that film has looked at this story?
No, I think there's been other work that has, there's been work that's gone to Māori television, but I think, I'm pretty sure that I know this is the first cinema piece.
And what's the approach that that Paula and Janine Martin have taken on this film? What's the method that they're using to tell this story?
Well, it was one of those things that it was the perfect way to do it, really. It was one of those films that grew. Like a lot of good documentaries, you know, it's a case of something's happening, pick up your camera and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So Paula and I had been doing oral histories of some kaumātua up there at Parihaka. And round about that time, Mātau Wharehoka said that the Kura Kaupapa were going down to Dunedin to visit the caves, and they were going to be calling in on all the places where the ancestors had been incarcerated. So it was, and she said, come too. So it was a case of grabbing cameras and just getting on the bus. So Paula got on the bus, and then I was supposed to be on the bus, but I had to go to Sydney for a Home by Christmas screening. So that's how long ago it was. Home by Christmas was just being completed. And so I rode side saddle and got taped to them and things like that. And so when they came off the bus, all the tapes came my way, and Tracy Egerton had been working on a short film that my assistant Michelle Saville was making. So yep. Tracy was kind of in the house. So she had a great interest in te reo. So Tracy got the job of logging all the tapes. And that's how the team was made. And from there on, we just started. Paula raised the money from TSB Trust, which allowed Tracy to take the material up to New Plymouth and work with Janine and him. And they did a rough cut, and then they brought the film down here and lived here in my house in Mount Victoria. And we started to add all the archival backstory to the story of the kids on the bus. So the film kept telling us what it wanted.
Mm.
There was a point there where Paula went to Mata and Ngāpere and the people and asked if they wanted. Did they want an educational video? Because he'd made a really successful one called Hiding Behind the Green Screen. Did they want an educational video, or did they want a film that went out into the world? And they said they wanted a film that went out into the world. So every time they said something like that, we'd have to roll our sleeves up, raise some more money, and do the next bit.
And how hard has that been when you say take it out to the world? That's an extremely challenging undertaking.
Yeah, it is. And every time the film grew, it had to raise more money. At a certain point, we had a rough cut. And I decided to see if Bill Gosden would give us some notes. So Bill came and looked at the film, and he said he would select it for the film festival. So then that meant, well, we are going to cinema. So again, we had to raise more money. And, you know, it's kind of like the world challenged us. And we felt that we were really the servants of the kaupapa. So we just do whatever came next. So it wasn't a case of us sitting around having a dream. Although, you know, I think that Mata and Paula are the dream makers in terms of this film, in terms of what they wanted it to do. Because, you know, it presents a lot of technical difficulties when what you've done is you've got on the bus. Because, you know, some of the shooting that's actually in the film was shot by 11-year-olds.
Right.
You know, it wasn't a shortage of footage that we had. If anything has shown to me clearly what good documentary is based on, it's totally to do with access. You know, because if you've got good access, you might have shots that are a bit grumpy, but it's amazing how once you start cutting things together and it all starts to get a bit beautiful. And once we gave it to Park Road Post, it got even more beautiful. And, of course, the archive footage had terrific graphics. And we had a wonderful graphics person who did extra work on the on that. So, I mean, it's really interesting. It took ages. It took 3 years. But it's really interesting to me how it is to do with access. If you're making a documentary, that's what it's about.
For listeners who are unfamiliar with Parehaka, or perhaps only familiar with it as a sort of name from the past, is the film a good introduction for them to the story?
Oh, I think so. What do you think?
Look, I have to confess to you that I haven't seen it.
Oh, I see. Right.
I should have asked Sue for a screener, sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Well, I think it's a brilliant introduction in that I think that what the film really is, to me, it's about how a community chooses to remember. It's not just what is remembered, it's how it's remembered. And it is a fantastic insight into the important ways that Māori approach remembering. And it's communal remembering.
The threads of generations.
And in many ways I think we now live in an amnesiac age. I think the Western world is fairly amnesiac. You know, it's very forgetful. The politics of the age reflect that. It's all spin and forgetting. And we don't do history as a core subject in our secondary schools anymore. So, I mean, basically, the way that Māori people choose to remember things is an absolute inspiration. And I mean, you could say, well, putting these kids on a bus and taking them on a tour of Victorian jails is pretty hard on those kids. But actually, they're with their parents, they're with their teachers, they're within a whole community that, and what they're doing when they go to these places is they're lifting, they're remembering, they're lifting the spirit, and they're sort of spiritually cleansing those places in memory of their people. And I mean, I find even now that we are fairly amnesiac about Anzac Day even, because though we have the military cemetery, you know, we've got the military remembrances.
Yeah, the formalities.
And the formalities. And it's certainly true that in Tātāwakihi you see plenty of Māori formality around remembering. But I think that our remembering isn't as inclusive as it could be. I would like to see Anzac Day far more inclusive, in that I would like to see Anzac Day include, within the formalities, a way for peace groups to put wreaths on cemeteries for the men who chose not to fight and had a really difficult time because of that.
Yeah, there's another aspect to.
I'd also like to see us remembering before the First World War, because if we remembered before the First World War, we would be remembering the land wars of Taranaki, for a start, on Anzac Day. Because we've got wars that we're forgetting about that happened in New Zealand that were like our civil war. So, you know, the Pākehā world is, to me, quite forgetful, and the Māori world is steadfastly remembering. And in the case of Parihaka, they're remembering with a terrific sense of forgiveness. you know, the forgiveness that is in the very heart of the kaupapa of Te Whiti o Rongomai and Tohu Kākahi, that belief that Māori and Pākehā need to be talking and need to be settling dispute is the central kaupapa. So these kids, the whole journey is in a state of remembrance and forgiveness.
Well, Gaylene, I really look forward to seeing it when it gets into Wellington cinemas this weekend. I'm sorry that I missed it first time around, but you know what film festivals are like. You pushed hither and yon by temptations. While we're on the subject of memory, I'd like to sort of get into your memory a little bit and ask you a bit about your career. And you've made 6 feature films, one of which is a documentary, which is an extraordinary achievement for a New Zealand director. You know, there's what, only maybe 3 or 4 directors that have got that many feature credits on their CV. How have you managed to maintain your career in a country that likes to support first and second films and then sort of leaves you to your own devices?
Look, I'm not sure. certainly, by the time I was making Ruby and Rata, it was pretty clear that everybody thought I was on my way to Hollywood. So there was an expectation that after your second film, you had to go to Hollywood. And I was an expatriate New Zealander returned, so I like it here. I also like, I suppose what I've done is I've made those films slowly, one at a time, and they have originated between my ears in terms of the idea. And I think a lot of how I've managed is I've managed with help, a lot of help. And I've managed by being a producer-director. So I'm prepared to take on the producer role, and that means that, you know, I'm the one that's the most obsessive about the idea that I want to make into the next feature. And so if I'm a producer as well as a director, I do the hard yards. And I think that's necessary, particularly in New Zealand, where producers are so under-resourced. So it's really hard for producers. I mean, it's hard enough for directors, but I think it's really hard for producers, particularly at the moment. So being your own producer, like seriously your own producer, I can actually produce.
So, and you produce for other people as well.
Yeah, well, that's been an accident also. I mean, I didn't set out to be a film producer. I've always really wanted to have, I'd love someone to go, righto, Gaylene, I'm going to produce your next film. What do you want to do next? And I will dedicate my life to it because I've got heaps of money and I can afford to. But, you know, that doesn't happen here in New Zealand, and at best your film ends up on someone else's slate as they struggle along trying to make things work. So I think that's probably been the key in retrospect.
Is there still much of a cooperative sort of film community in Wellington? I remember 20 years ago when people were starting out making short films, everybody was crewing on everybody else's films for nothing, knowing that, you know, when it was their turn, there'd be a whole bunch of people to turn up and help them out too. And as the industry in Wellington has got bigger and more professional, and there's more overseas production, and there's all that stuff happening in Miramar, does it still have that same sort of vibe about it?
Oh, I think so. I think it has, and I think I'm the lucky recipient. And in fact, I would say that that, you know, that is the cultural base of the film industry in Wellington. I'm not a great fan for everybody working on everybody else's films for free, however, and one thing I am proud of is that, particularly with Paparakihi, I still stand out for, you know, I stand up for paying people for the work they do. You know, everybody could have worked on that film for free, but we chose to raise the money. Now, the filmmakers have worked on the film for free. I have, Paula has, and Janine has, but we've got a thing that means that the filmmakers will get paid back if there's money flowing. So, you know, I don't agree with working on films for free. Just because I want to work in a professionalised industry. And I think people work really hard and they deserve to be paid. So my films have never paid people their top dollar by any means. But they've always paid people more than just their petrol money. Mm. And actually, if you look at the films that were in the film festival this year, there were 12 New Zealand films. They did terrific, you know, they had a great profile. They attracted an audience. Some of them were like Paparakihi in the, you know, backed by popular demand. Some of them had sell-out screenings. And yet, if I did a bit of a survey around the filmmakers, so it's a very rough survey, and none of those filmmakers, not one in the whole 12, had actually been paid a fee for making their films, producers or directors. Most of the films had taken years to make. The highest budget was $250,000 for a feature film, and the lowest budget was $0. Mm-hmm. Most filmmakers had taken jobs in order to support the finishing of the films. And these are the lucky 12 that, and among those 12 will be films that turn up in international festivals that represent our country this year. So it's a triumph of amateurism at the moment. And I think it's possible to make such great work for free because we do have a collegial atmosphere. Not just in Wellington, I mean, across the New Zealand film industry we do. And it's something to be proud of, but I think we need to be looking at what to do about this because talented hobbyists isn't going to build the future because people get ground down.
You mentioned Park Road Post a little bit earlier on and the work that they did to help Tatarakihi sort of buff that up. And, you know, we've got this world-class facility here in Wellington. Are they how helpful are they when it comes to taking, I guess, the technical side of a film to the next level?
Hugely. I mean, they haven't been paid a brass farthing for Paparakihi. They put it on their sponsor list. After I had to go over and look and have a bit of a discussion about our bills, and in the end they said, look, we love this film. It's a privilege for us to work on it and put it in their sponsorship pile. So I suppose there's $25,000, $30,000 worth of freebie there.
Wow. You always seem to be busy. You always seem to be pushing new projects and projects forward. Do you look back at your own career much? Are you conscious of wanting to sort of keep your work in print, as it were? Are there plans, for example, to remaster or reissue some of your older work?
Oh, look, I'd love to redo Mr. Wrong. Mr. Wrong's screening at the Film Archives on the 7th of November. And you know, the first question is it okay to screen? I go, wonderful, yes, but what are you screening? Because we have a very good 30, the picture's terrific. Tom Burston was the cinematographer. Alan Bollinger operated it. And Tom, and it's a 16mm blow-up that surpasses anything even now. But its telecine is awfully old, and it's the wrong format. And the real problem with that film is that it's probably the last film made in mono. So it hasn't even got a stereo soundtrack, and it needs a surround soundtrack. Its track is very old-fashioned, and I'd love to spruce it up, but that's where I would need somebody to get really enthusiastic to do it, because I get so involved with the future. So I executive produced three films last year, one of which I also directed the drama in, while developing what I'm working on now. So, you know, I'm just flat out, really. I'm a bit of a, if I had another name for my film company, which is unimaginatively called Gaylene Preston Productions, but if I was thinking of another name for it, I'd call it Macrame Movies. Because I just kind of hunker in and knit them.
Gaylene, I hope that you find a patron with a love of your old work who's prepared to sort of put their hands in their pocket to get those old films sort of looking as and sounding as good as they possibly can. I think it's one of those aspects of our New Zealand film history and our Wellington film history that I think is easy to shelve, you know, and shelve for too long.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a Redux of Utu, you'll be pleased to hear.
I heard that at David Carson Parker's service yesterday, and apparently that was one of the things that he was most happy about hearing before he passed last week.
That's right. And, of course, they invent new technology, and the next thing you find that you've got a retrospective of work, all of which can't be screened in the venue. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting time that we're in, our old work. But I think I sort of have faith that at least it's there. You know, I think about my work, you know, that's there. And I trust that it's there. But I could be a bit naive in thinking that, and I have got a couple of films that I'm not quite sure where they are. So, you know, you can lose them. I think my approach, well, I came back to New Zealand in 1977 and I worked at Pacific Films, and I saw a very collegial and communal way of working there. And I guess I've stuck with that pretty much. So I have I have the privilege of working with people. There's a sort of a rotating group of people, and they're not the same on every film, but we work together a lot, and we've grown up. Our filmmaking has grown together. We get together. You know, it always takes me much longer to get a film together than it takes them. You know, they've always done five or six between my movies. And it's always a real pleasure because we realise that we've all got better. We just keep getting better. And that's the most important thing, you know, to have challenges. And I just get fascinated. You know, filmmaking is really, really interesting. And the more you do it, the more interesting it is, or that's how I found it.
Gaylene, so, that's brilliant. Thank you very much for your time and for appearing on Cinematica. best of luck with Tātarakihi in cinemas, and I hope that it continues to have a long life here in New Zealand and overseas.
Oh, thank you. I'm pretty sure that people will be looking at it in 30 years' time.